Embrace Your Beautiful Destiny, a show where we will talk about finding beauty in the most unconventional places in our lives. So every week, we'll talk about dealing with disappointment or overcoming frustration, and dealing with stuff that just gets under your skin and derails you. We'll also have amazing guests on here that'll be sharing their stories. So I'm your host, Shanna Strange. Let's dive in. You actually came back. You didn't run away. That's exciting. Yay. So I'm hoping that if you stick with me over these next few weeks and months, that this is really going to make a difference in your life. And today we're going to talk a little bit about the beauty of disappointing detours. That just sounds almost paradoxical. Like, how could you find something beautiful when you're totally being disappointed by a detour? Like, something totally unexpected, something super frustrating. You know, especially if you feel like God told you to do something or go in a certain direction, and then like all hell breaks loose, or God blocks you, or something totally unexpected happens, and it can be really derailing to you, because you can feel like, okay, God, did I not have a clear word from you? You know, did I misunderstand you, or what's going on here? So what happens when God disrupts our plans, and how in the world can that be beautiful? So what we're going to do is we're actually going to look at Genesis 37 a little bit today, and we're going to look at Joseph's life, and we're going to see what it feels like and what it looks like when God disrupts your life and sends you on a detour. So we're going to start with Genesis 37, chapter 2. So here we are. This is at 17 years of age. Joseph tended sheep with his brothers. The young man was working with the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, his father's wives, and he brought a bad report about them to their father. Now, I want you to think about this for a second. Joseph lives in a very dysfunctional family. you can look at this, and if you keep reading, as we will, you will see that it's very dysfunctional. You've got all kinds of jealousy going on. You've got favoritism from Jacob. He favors Joseph over his other brothers. You can see here, I mean, it definitely clarifies for you that Joseph was half-brothers with the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah. So Joseph, at this point in time, I don't yet think Benjamin, his other full brother, has been born yet. Although he may, I can't remember, honestly. But this is Joseph's favorite son, because Jacob was born to his favorite wife, Rachel. So you can just see how favoritism is just kind of just all over these passages, and when you're reading it, it doesn't seem like that. You almost have to really just stop and think about, okay, what did I just read? Why did this author make a he's distinguished, you know, that these were brothers born of Bilhah and Zilpah and not his full brothers? Well, it's important to know, because there was such hostility within this family, and it even goes back further. I mean, you think about Jacob and how much dysfunction was in his family. I mean, he stole the birthright from Esau. Totally tricked the father to get the birthright, and lied, and was just a trickster. His name even means trickster. You think about before him, the dysfunction that existed in Abraham, Sarah, and Isaac's life. Isaac is, you know, the product of a child of faith, basically, but Abraham and Sarah took matters into their own hands and brought about the life of Ishmael, which created so much hostility within the family and dysfunction. So I'm trying to paint this picture for you that this was not an easy a situation. This was not like a family that had been to a lot of counseling and they all loved each other. This is a family who's like frustrated and everyone is kind of on edge and no one can stand Joseph. So let's keep reading about this. So he brings a bad report about his half-brothers to his father, Joseph, or to Jacob. Now, Israel loved Joseph more than his other sons because Joseph was a son born to him in his old age, and he made a robe of many colors for him. So now his brothers hate him. Not only is he the favorite, but now they hate him because he has this special robe, right? When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all of the other brothers, they hated him and could not bring themselves to speak peaceably to him. I mean, I don't know if you can understand that. I mean, it would be extremely difficult if you, and maybe this happened to you, and I hope not, but I know that my parents didn't raise me and my sister differently. They didn't treat her better than they treated me, but I do know a lot of people who are raised in that environment, and it's hard not to have resentment and bitterness in your heart towards a brother or sister that got preferential treatment, right? But that's what happened. Then Joseph, he has a dream. When he told it to his brothers, they hated him even more. So they hate him because he's loved. They hate him because he has a coat. Now they hate him because he had a dream and he told it to him, which he probably honestly should have kept it to himself, but that's okay. He said to them, "Listen to this dream I had. There we were, binding sheaves of grain in the field. Suddenly my sheaf stood up and your sheaves gathered around it and bowed down to my sheaf." Are you really going to reign over us? His brothers asked him. Are you really going to rule us? So they hated him even more because of this dream and what he had said. Oh my gosh. Seriously, he probably should have just kept this to himself because now it looks like he's bragging. So he's incited even more hostility, you know, from his brothers towards him by just talking about something that should have been kept on the down low. But that's okay. God uses this. Then he had another dream. And he told it to his brothers. "Look," he said, "I had another dream. And this time the sun, the moon, and the 11 stars were bowing down to me." He told his fathers and brothers, and his father rebuked him. "What kind of dream is this that you have had?" he said. "Am I and your mother and your brothers really going to come and bow down to the ground before you?" His brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the matter in mind. So his dad's like scolding him, but he's also thinking, oh gosh, this is prophetic. Yikes. Okay, so let's keep going. His brothers had gone to pasture their father's flock at Shechem. Israel said to Joseph, "Your brothers, you know, are pasturing the flocks at Shechem. Go, get ready. I'm sending you to them." He's probably going to go spy on them. That was his custom, right? "I'm ready," Joseph replied. Then Israel said to him, "Go and see how your brothers and the flocks are doing and bring word back to me." So he sent him from the Hebron Valley and he went to Shechem. A man found him there, wandering in the field, and asked him, "What are you looking for?" "I'm looking for my brothers," Joseph said. "Can you tell me where they're pasturing their flocks?" "They've moved on from here," the man said. "I heard them say, 'Let's go to Dothan.'" So Joseph set out after his brothers and found them at Dothan. They saw him in the distance, and before he had reached them, they plotted to kill him. They said to one another, "Oh, look, here comes that dream expert. So now, come on, let's kill him and throw him into one of those pits. We can say that a vicious animal ate him. Then we'll see what becomes of his dreams." When Reuben heard this, he tried to save him from them. He said, "Let's not take his life. Don't shed blood. Throw him into this pit in the wilderness, but don't lay a hand on him," intending to rescue him from them and return him to his father. When Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped off Joseph's robe, the robe of many colors that he had on. Then they took him and threw him into the pit. The pit was empty, without water. They sat down to eat a meal, and when they looked up, there was a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead. Their camels were carrying aromatic gum, balsam, and resin, going down to Egypt. Judah said to his brothers, "What do we gain if we kill our brother and cover up his blood? Come on, let's sell him to the Ishmaelites and not lay a hand on him, for he is our brother, our own flesh. And his brothers agreed. When Midianite traders passed by, his brothers pulled Joseph out of the pit and sold him for 20 pieces of silver to the Ishmaelites, who took Joseph to Egypt. When Reuben returned to the pit and saw that Joseph was not there, he tore his clothes. He went back to his brothers and said, "The boy is gone. What am I to do?" So they took Joseph's robe, slaughtered a male goat, and dipped the robe in its blood. They sent the robe of many colors to their fathers and said, "We found this. Examine it. Is it your son's robe or not?" His father recognized it. "It is my son's robe," he said. "A vicious animal has devoured him. Joseph has been torn to pieces." Then Jacob tore his clothes, put sackcloth around his waist, and mourned for his son many days. All his sons and daughters tried to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted. "No," he said, "I will go down to Sheol to my son," mourning, and his father wept for him. Meanwhile, the Midianites sold Joseph in Egypt to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh and the captain of the guards. So what a turn of events, and what a great illustration of when God says, "Okay, I'm about to disrupt your life." You know, I mean, that's probably not what Joseph thought was going to happen in his life, or what he wanted to happen. If you think about this for a second, Joseph was, at that point, the youngest. He was not, there's going to come one behind him. His brother Benjamin is going to be the youngest. But technically, if you think about this, if God had not have intervened, Joseph's life would have probably been very, what's the word I'm looking for? Uneventful. Joseph would not have been in line for receiving any inheritance. The best that Joseph could have hoped for was that coat of many colors that he had. There was really no way. I mean, Jacob could have left a blessing, and he does this at the end of his life. He leaves a blessing over his sons, but everyone knows in ancient customs, I mean, it was the oldest son who got everything. And the blessing of God basically was on the oldest child. But for whatever reason, God said, "That's not the one that I'm going to use to deliver my people. I'm going to use Joseph." And I love that, because here you have God. He's defining, you know, he's defining destiny for people. He's saying, "This is what's going to happen. I don't care what it looks like, or I don't care who's supposed to be in this position. It's up to me, and I'm going to put this person where they need to be," right? So one of the things that we see with detours, this is the first point that I'm going to make about it, is that God changes the trajectory of our life with detours. And so when you start to realize that, you have to realize that there's beauty even in that. I don't know if you've had a life-changing detour. I've had several of them. I remember when I graduated from high school, I was awarded the presidential scholarship because my GPA was pretty high, and I had always been a good student and graduated with honors and stuff like that. And so I got the presidential scholarship and didn't have to pay for books or tuition my first semester. It was going to actually be renewed every semester. I had to just make a B in every class. Well, I thought to myself, that's not going to be a big deal. I mean, I've always made straight A's. Honestly, I think the only B I ever made in high school was geometry, which, by the way, I hated. Never understood it, really. I just kind of figured a way out to make it through that class. But I get to college, and I had always made, you know, A's in algebra. I mean, they were low A's, but they were A's, and who cares, as long as, you know, you made an A. And so I thought, well, I'll be fine. And so they told me, they said, "Well, you did score a little low on your college entrance exam for math. So you might want to take like a pre-algebra type class before you go straight into algebra." I thought, nah, I'll be fine. So I went ahead and took straight up college algebra. I'm telling you, that class just about killed me. And I remember crying my eyes out. I remember going and getting help from the professor. And But you know, I tried really hard, but the best I could do in that class was a C. And it devastated me. The reason it devastated me is because I lost my scholarship. And at this point, I'm already married. You know, I'm in like a barely out of high school, 18-year-old who decided to get married. And so I didn't have my dad there to say, hey, I'm going to pay for your college anymore. You know, he said, once you get married, I'm not responsible for that. So, and we didn't have the money. And I, for whatever reason, I didn't really apply for any, you know, college aid help with tuition and all that because I had the scholarship. So, and it just became very apparent to me that I was going to have to get a job, you know, because some things happened with my husband's job and that was like, okay, I've got to get a job. And so, I just had to quit school and it changed the trajectory of my life. I was going to school for accounting. Ha ha ha. That's hilarious to me because I actually hate accounting and I hate math, but I don't even know why I chose that. I knew I didn't want to go into nursing. I knew I wasn't the nursing type, but I knew there was good money in the medical field, but I just was like, ah, that's not for me. So I thought, well, I'll just do business. And then I got really specific and said, well, I'll just do accounting. And so I was at Kilgore College, just a local college where I live, and just taking business classes. And I really kind of hated it anyways. So I ended up having, you know, dropping out and I started working. I found a job at a bank at the very bottom level, scanning documents. And so, you know, I spent the next 7 years of my life at that bank thinking I was gonna be like a loan officer. I thought, you know what? I'm good with helping people with their loan needs. You know, I liked it. I especially liked real estate loans, and so I worked my way up, and I made it to like an assistant to a loan officer, to a VP. And my goal was to keep working my way through college classes, and eventually, when I got my bachelor's in business, I was like, okay, then they'll promote me into a lending officer. And then I got slammed with another detour. While I was in the middle of all of that, God started to really change my heart, and I started to remember just how much I loved music and how much I wanted to sing for him and sing about him. And doors started to open. I started to, you know, this will kind of lead back to that first episode where I talk about waking up in the middle of the night with songs, and that's when that started to happen. I was like 19 or 20, and I just started to have these weird feelings like I was not called to the business world. And it created this, you know, about 3 or 4 years into working at the bank, I started to hate it and despise it because I knew that that's not what I was made to do. And so I kept feeling like I am about to go on another detour, and that's exactly what happened. God sent me on another detour that changed the direction of my life because if I'd have kept going that way, I would have just been working at a bank, being a loan officer the rest of my life. And that would have been a good life. Just like it would have been an okay life for Joseph to be a shepherd the rest of his life. That's what he was going to be, was a shepherd. It would have never taken him. I mean, God could have used anything to get him where he needed to go, but he decided that that was the route. And so what I'm trying to say is that detours are going to change the direction of your life, and there's actually beauty in that, and you can embrace that when something happens that is so far off of your radar that you are like, how can this be God? Let me tell you, if you're a child of God and you are a follower of Christ, it is God. It is God when those things happen in your life that are just coming out of left field, and you are like, what in the world? It's God. He's changing the direction of your life. Another thing that's beautiful, doesn't feel beautiful in the moment, but another thing that happens in a detour is that God uses them to develop our character. Ooh, yes. God uses detours to develop your character. It's kind of like when, you know, if you've ever had a toddler, and you don't give them something they want, there is a screaming fit that happens. But it's necessary to withhold things from the child so that they can understand that you don't always get what you want. It builds character in the child, right? It's the same with us. I mean, we are not born spiritually mature. We are not born having Christ-like character. I mean, we have got to go through some junk with the Lord so that we can learn, you know, how to die to ourselves, that we can surrender, that we can become more like Him by suffering a little bit sometimes. And that's not fun. And it sure don't feel beautiful. You know what I'm saying? It does not feel good when you're going through stuff like that. But, you know, our pride and our arrogance gets stripped away in detours because you don't know where the heck you're going. I mean, you don't know anymore, so you're not in charge. So it's kind of hard to be prideful and arrogant when you don't know what the next step is, and you don't have any understanding. All that you have is literally a prayer to God saying, please, God, help me. Please, Lord, show me. I mean, we know for a fact, you know, I mean, I say for a fact, but really it's more implicit. If you read these scriptures that we just looked at, if you look at them, you'll see that pride and arrogance were kind of a quality in Joseph's life. I mean, you can see, I mean, a bad quality, not a good one, a bad one. I mean, it doesn't say that Joseph was prideful, but just by his actions, I mean, he's bragging to his brothers about his dreams. Not once, but twice. He's wearing the coat around in front of everybody, you know, making them mad. I mean, instead of just pulling it out occasionally or a special occasion or just something like that and wearing it. No, he wears it everywhere all the time in their face, reminding them that their father loves him more. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that has to be broken off of us. If God wanted to promote Joseph right on into the palace with Pharaoh, which he's going to do in a long time, he could have done it, but he said, no, there's some junk that I got to deal with in Joseph that it's going to take sandpaper. Sandpaper. No one likes sandpaper, but sandpaper is necessary because without that, we're going to be horrible people. And so God uses those detours to really change us and to transform our character. The next thing, the third thing God does in a detour is He will align us to His will. So before a detour happens, we might think, I'm in God's will. I'm following the path that I set out for myself after I prayed and I felt like God showed me, you know, that this was going to happen. This is where I needed to be. And that's great. Perfect. That's what you need to do. You need to pray. You need to say, God, I want to be in your will. Send me where you want. And He, you know, opens the door and that's where you go. And then it can be like crazy when something, you're there in the will of God, it feels like. And then something else happens and that whole situation blows up. And so you have to know that that's God aligning you to His will. Right? He has a perfect will for you. And He doesn't tell you all the details. Because if He told you, you wouldn't need to have faith. You would be your own God if you knew everything about the will of God and what was going to happen next and where you were supposed to be at every point and second on the timeline. You would be your own God, and you would not surrender, and you would have no need for Him in your life. So He's doing you a favor, and it's a beautiful favor, by the way. It's beautiful because you're going to have to lean on Him. You're going to have to walk with Him. You're going to have to pray. You're going to have to seek Him. It's really sad to me, and I'm guilty of this too. We are. This is human nature, to only run to God when we have questions or when we're hurting or when we don't know what to do or we're being challenged. But God wants us to come to a place where we're going to seek Him no matter what. Like, we're going to seek Him when it's good. We're going to seek Him when it's bad. We're going to seek Him when we have answers and when we understand and, you know, we're super happy. We're still going to worship. We're still going to praise. That's the price tag for someone who wants to be, in my opinion, in full-time ministry, in some kind of leadership capacity. It's not about works, for sure. I'm not saying that it's about works. It's about the heart. And God looks at the heart. And the only time that you are praying is when you are confused or scared, then you haven't arrived at this place. You have not arrived at this place of understanding of, you know, God wanting you to just be with you, not because you can give him something, but because he loves you. That's really what this is about. This is about loving God more than the dream, loving God more than the destination, and seeing that every single day is a chance to become aligned to his will and getting to that place where you're like, God, you know, I will do whatever you want me to do today. If it's not what I planned, I'm okay with that, God. I'm not going to get upset. I'm not going to be frustrated, right? That's the surrender he's looking for. And I'm going to say, you know, this last thing that I gather from studying Joseph's life and this text that we just read is that God uses detours to test us. And there's actually a scripture in Psalms that said, until the dream was fulfilled in Joseph's life, the word of God tested him. And that's exactly, if God gave you a dream, let me tell you something, you are gonna be tested. There is no way around it. But it's okay. You don't need to be afraid. You don't need to dread it. You don't need to be worried and anxious. He's gonna help you. It's gonna hurt. You're gonna be stripped of some things. You're gonna want to give up sometimes. You're gonna want to just say, what in the world? Why, God? Why did you not say this? Then why is something totally different happening in my life? It's because of the testing. When God releases his word, it's always tested. Why? Why is it always tested? Because it needs to be found true. It needs to be found true. And it will be found true in the end. Because whatever God speaks does not return to him void, right? You just have the option, if you want to partner with God, to fulfill that word in your life, right? You can walk away from this thing if you want, no doubt. Although I do think, if you're truly a child of God and a follower of Christ, you're going to come back. You're just going to make it take longer than it could have. But I will say something that Joseph did very well, and we'll keep looking at his story in the weeks to come, is Joseph really humbled himself before the Lord and surrendered to God in such a way that it was so beautiful and so confirming of who he was and his place in, you know, redeeming his kinsmen. And I think it's an amazing story. And I think that God put it there for us so that when we are tested, when we are put through the fire, you know, when things don't make sense and detours happen, that we would understand that detours are from God. Detours are from God. And they don't have to destroy us. They're just used to refine us. That's the beauty of a detour. It's that, you know, you are a diamond in the rough and God is cleaning you up. He's polishing you and he's using a detour to do it. Oh man, does it hurt? Does it hurt? Yes. But there's also this place that you can get to where you rest in it and you're just kind of like, you know what, God, I'm not going to wrestle with this anymore. I'm not going to wrestle you. I'm not going to try to change and get out of the detour and get back to where I wanted to be because I've done that before. It doesn't work. But I'm just going to rest at your feet and I'm going to give you the reins of my life. Could you do that today? Could you just give him the reins of your life and live in that unforced rhythm that he has for you? Because that's what he wants for you. That's the beauty of a detour. I'm so glad you joined me today. Hey friends, thank you for showing up for today's episode. I wanted to take a second and tell you about my book, Providence, Embrace Your Beautiful Destiny. So when God gives you a dream, it doesn't come with a manual, does it? At first, excitement and longing for that dream can drive you. But if you don't understand God's process of preparing you for the dream, you can travel a disappointing, discouraging, and confusing path. And here's the thing, dreams inspired by God require intense seasons of refinement, perseverance, and character development. Whatever you must endure to reach his dream for you is outweighed by the glory of being changed by God in the most uncommon ways. So I'd love for you to have this book in your hands. There's a couple of different ways you can get it. You can go to my website, shannastrange.net, or you can go to Amazon and just look up Providence, Embrace Your Beautiful Destiny, and you'll find it. It's in digital form, or you can order a hard copy. Thanks, and I'll see you next week.